Headbangers. This is Rudy Sarzo, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast at TrustMeI'mAJedi.com.
This is Walter Simonson. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 47 of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is your host, Mark, and we've got Matt and Frank in the house. And we've got special guests in the house today. Mm-hmm. We have Justin Corbett and George Tripsis.
Hello.
From Comical Podcast. Justin, George.
Metal Geeks.
I hate Metal Geeks. That's a joke. Well, no, it's a joke when they're always messing with me about George hates metal.
Yeah, they always talk about
you
that.
You know. And welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us.
You know, we're bringing you guys on because y'all got a special project happening, and y'all also, a lot of people that listen to the show, we talk about this sometimes, I know you guys too, about in Houston, Texas, we have a really great podcast community. A lot of us support each other, and we go on each other's shows when we can and stuff, and we just, there's no competition at all, really. We're just all supporting each other out, and that's what we do. We help each other because that's Texas. We're friendly sometimes.
Well, it's fun.
It's fun.
It's fun to hang out with other podcasters.
Yeah, we have a good time. And, so we're going to get right into y'all's project before we talk about other things going on in the geek world. And you guys are doing a Kickstarter for a comic book. And its title is Speak No Evil. And y'all have created Grey Bear Comics as y'all's company name for it. And that's the first thing I want to ask. Where did Grey Bear come from?
People really are interested.
They really are. All right. So for a long time, any project I've created has been underneath the mantle of Grey Matter Productions. And George
and my video production company. Before we got together, it was just Yorgi Productions, and the logo was a bear, and so we decided just to merge the two together and call it Great Bear Comics.
That's it. It's simple.
It's really simple. Underwhelming.
It's a very underwhelming story.
Well, it's like with me, I do everything I call under Hole in the Wall Productions, because it goes back. You guys know Mark Nasso, goes back to an economics project we did in high school where we did our own comic thing, and it was silly art, you know, and we called it Hole in the Wall Comics.
Cool.
And Mark ever since then said, yeah, you can use Hole in the Wall. So that's where I got it from.
Nice.
So Grey Bear Comics, and the book is Speak No Evil.
Right.
And so you guys have a Kickstarter going, and you're already like at 56%, right?
58%.
58%.
Yeah, this morning.
Yes, because I helped out. I got on this morning because I've been meeting all week. to get on there, and I got on there this morning.
Appreciate it.
And so
I didn't give y'all shit.
Hey. Well, he's always a cheap one in the group. We're buying him beer all the time. So. So tell us about it.
Okay, well, Speak No Evil is the story of two teenage brothers in the 1930s. They've gotten by for years by scamming people, stealing stuff, and unfortunately for them, they pick the wrong person to steal from. They steal from this very nefarious gang leader who, in the 1930s, he's a black man who leads a white gang, so obviously not somebody you want to fuck with.
Right, nice.
But they do steal from him, and he comes after them hard, and they're forced to go on the run, and they end up hiding out in this cabin in the woods. And the interesting thing about the cabin is that 10 years before the boys discover it, H.P. Lovecraft and Nikola Tesla collaborated to try to contact another dimension, and they were successful. And a lot of evil things came through the portal they opened. So they boxed everything up, walked away from it. It was way too much for them to deal with, and now the boys have stumbled upon it. And what they find waiting for them in the cabin is probably going to change their lives forever.
No, it will change their lives.
It will.
Yeah.
So... obviously, just all those names you threw out there with Tesla and Lovecraft, a lot of influence from stuff. Does that come from stuff y'all have read over the years? And just
we're both big Lovecraft fans. We're both really big fans of Evil Dead.
Ghostbusters.
Hmm. There's a lot of elements of stuff. I think our friend Steve Orlando, the writer of Midnighter, he gave us a great quote that said it's like the best of Ghostbusters, The Prestige, and Evil Dead kind of shoved together.
Right. That's one thing I really liked when I watched Prestige was the Tesla stuff. And I was like, well, that's really cool because it's a character it's a real life character in history a lot of people aren't always familiar with. And it seems like in the last 15 years, he's starting to get some love through movies and now y'all's comic and other things.
Yeah, and it really is kind of a weird time because there's a lot of resurgence of like Nikola Tesla
and Lovecraft
stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Cthulhu stuff is everywhere.
No.
Yeah, and I mean we're not really. It wasn't our intention to like kind of jump on that bandwagon. It just sort of happened.
Yeah, I came up with a story a couple of years ago, and it came from me seeing a poster of Lovecraft and Tesla. They look like monster hunters, and I thought, man, wouldn't it be great in real history if they actually knew each other? And then from that, I started coming up with a story, and I wanted to make a short film about it, and. More and more I started researching it. I was never going to be able to afford it. And then I told Justin about it, and he convinced me to make it into a comic book. And here we are 7 months later.
So question, is that why y'all decided to do it in the time period that y'all did it?
Yeah.
It's a little bit historically accurate. It's not 100%, but there are historical figures in the book. And we tried to make the cars and the clothes and the cities look like they would have back then. But it also has kind of a more modern feel with the dialogue and
some of it. I mean, we try to keep true to it. Like
we do try to like slide in slang words from that time period and stuff, but not everything works.
For example, I wanted to call the gun. There's a point in the book. Is it this year or the second issue?
It's the second issue.
Second issue where he refers to a gun to his penis.
Mm-hmm. He starts humping the gun, and we're trying to find a slang word for like. You know, dick, cock, or whatever. But
In the 30s,
and one of the slang words we came across was cranny hunter.
And I was in love with this word. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. It's a little bit gross.
And Justin thought it was just a little gross, and he didn't want to put it in.
Well, I didn't want to put it in as reference to his...
penis.
His junk, yeah.
Well, like, I think it's a great insult to use later on.
So it might come back later.
Yeah.
And, I'm going to laugh about that. I'm going to use it at work now. Hey, you know.
That's what it was for.
Yeah, but you're right, though. Stuff nowadays takes place in old times, like Deadwood and stuff, was full of modern language, and it's really bizarre. But I think it's okay if it works. It's like you don't want the character saying every other word be the F word. Yeah, right. But I think it's okay. And because people probably did talk like that back then to an extent, but they had certain slangs. So y'all have up to 20 issues planned on this, right? Is what I heard when I was reading.
The whole thing is we want to do a 20-issue story because we have planned to finish it in 20 issues.
Okay, so we're starting out with the first issue, and we're doing a Kickstarter. Okay. So what's going on with the Kickstarter? Tell me what they can get and, you know, what, you know, and what to do, you know.
Well, the easiest way to get to the Kickstarter is to just go to graybearcomics.com. That's G-R-A-Y. It'll take you straight to the Kickstarter. Or you can go to the Kickstarter's website and do a search for Speak No Evil and find it that way. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. We're posting about it like 6 times a day.
Yeah. I know we shared it on Trust Me, Jedi, and we'll definitely keep sharing it for you guys, obviously.
Awesome. We appreciate it.
And so, who's doing the art?
The art is being done by a Brazilian artist named Samir Samal.
Okay.
He's incredible. Like, okay. I feel really lucky to have him on the team.
We were so fortunate to have him on.
How did y'all find him?
He found us.
Oh, okay.
Well, we put out a...
Yeah, I remember you were putting out... Yeah, looking
for...
We put
out a call on a bunch of different resources. I mean, there's all these different websites and forums and stuff where creators can try to find collaborators.
Wow.
And they put out requests about what they're looking for, and then artists submit their portfolios, and then you figure out who you want to hire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it basically works that way. And we had about 150 people submit different art stuff to us. We went through every single one of them.
That took a while.
It took a little while. You know, some of them were easy to dismiss, and some of them were very good. And we narrowed it down to 3 and sent out requests to them to do a test page for us. And 2 of the guys came back and said, yeah, sure, no problem. I'll have it done by the weekend or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The third guy said, you either like my artwork or you don't. I'm not going to do a test page. And I was like, okay, well, I think we should just discount this guy because he's going to be difficult to work with either way. He's not willing to do this. And Samir had just sent in his thing. And George was like, wow, I really like this guy's stuff. We should have him do it.
It was a match made in heaven. Yeah.
Correct.
I kind of said, well, I don't want to have too many people do test pages because then we're going to let 3 people do it for no reason. Like, we'll just wait and see what comes of these 2. And he says, well, no, this other guy dropped out. Why don't we reach out to him? Just do it. I said, okay. So then we reached out to him, and Samir, like, the very next day sent us the best of the 3 test pages.
Wow.
He's amazing.
He does action scenes better than just about anybody that's out there doing artwork right now.
His test page is actually in the Kickstarter video.
Yeah, I did see that.
You don't know how long he's been doing?
3 years.
Yeah, he's been doing art for a while.
Yeah, he's worked on, I think, 20 or 25 comic projects.
So is he self-taught, or did he go to school for that?
I think he's self-taught.
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. See, I like the self-taught.
His natural talent.
Yeah, natural talent.
Oh, Matt, you spoke over there.
I know, I did.
Hi, Matt.
Well, my question kind of got took away. They mentioned Evil Dead, so I was like, are we going to have some kind of boomstick reference? And then they came out with the Cranny Hunter. So
that's close enough,
and
right?
Then I was like, okay, so they brought in the nickname for that they're going to call their gun. I was like, well, there goes my question. So.
Probably the closest Evil Dead reference we'll have is probably the amount of gore that's going to be in our comic. And that's what makes it kind of fun.
Yeah.
For me, at least.
So it's definitely not for kids.
See, I'm the kind of person I like it.
It depends what you expose your children to.
When people put into their work stuff that they were influenced by. And you can see it in it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, and I'm not one of those people like, oh, well, they took from this. Well, yeah, they took from this. You know, but that's a good thing. They took the best of what they loved. And mash it up with other stuff that they love, and I just, like...
That's exactly how I feel about this book.
The end of issue 2, there's a scene where one of the boys kicks in the door of a hotel and walks in holding the gun. And he goes, has anybody seen a 6-foot-tall centipede monster? Like, I mean, if that's not an homage to, like, Ghostbusters, I don't know what is.
Yeah, so it'll be, like, perfect, you know. And when people read it, they'll get it, you know.
I hope so.
Or at least the people who are geeks will get it.
Yes.
You know?
We all mentioned other historical characters. Who else might we see in this in this run? Do you know yet?
Well, we kicked around the idea of maybe meeting Edison at one point.
Because of his whole rivalry.
His whole, history with Tesla.
Oh, yeah.
But the key point is that the two brothers are the main figures, so it's really their misadventures through this horror comedy. It's really... H.P. and Lovecraft are kind of like the
catalyst,
the precursor to the story. Yeah.
They will play a role in the story later on as well, but they're not the focal point of the story.
Now, the two brothers, where are they influenced from? Are they based on you guys, maybe? Or
I never had a brother.
Right.
Me neither. Sisters,
and I always wanted a brother. So I always imagined what brothers would act like, you know, especially when they're teenagers, and very adolescent, making a lot of potty humor and dick and fart jokes and stuff. And that's, you know, I put a lot of that into these two characters. We named them Silas and Edwin. I named Silas, and he named Edwin.
Right.
And Silas, I actually took the inspiration from the character with the same namesake on the TV show Weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I loved the older brother on Weeds, Silas, so I made him, you know, the inspiration for this, but put a lot of my own personality into it. And I think Edwin is a lot more George than me.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
So, if anything, those are us in a comic book, I guess.
Right. Taken from your personal, what y'all want in the brothers, and
very much us, because most of the time when we're writing, it's just usually us kicking stuff back and forth.
Yeah, so basically, you're putting your own personality into your characters that y'all created.
Yeah, I try to a little bit, but we also make every decision based on what those characters would do in that particular instance and stuff like that. So we really do put a lot of thought into the dialogue and how it affects events later.
Now, along with the Kickstarter, which I hope people go and support for you guys, when making a comic, is obviously it's a big task, and when y'all are doing this from the ground up, from what y'all basically know from you working in video production and you basically reading comics, just are y'all doing thumbnails for the artists? Are y'all are y'all scripting this, or y'all
do you have any of my
like I've tried scripting a book once, and I found it easier to write it out than go back and script it out.
Oh.
And does that make sense, to plot it out?
We do an overview. We write a very like detailed overview, and then we go back and turn the overview into a script.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually our process. And we did, I think, 7 revisions on the first draft of issue 1 before we finally got a version that our editors gave us the okay on to go ahead and get it, the art started.
Right.
And the artist, I mean, he'll send us preliminary pencils.
Right.
Like, we're letting him have complete freedom to interpret things how he wants, but he'll send us the pencils.
And in then case if we have something to change.
And there have been a few things. I mean, I think on every page there's been at least one thing that we had to adjust.
Right.
But it's not anything huge. It's more like aesthetic kind of things. Like, he's a metalhead just like us. Mm. Like, he's a big-time metalhead. You'll see, I mean, even on the Kickstarter, you can see the art.
Right.
Like, Lovecraft's like, yeah! Like, when he's, like, summoning demons, he's, like, throwing up horns and stuff. It's great. But, like, he just recently, one of the pages has a phonograph machine on it. And he made it look like a phonograph from hell. Like, it has little eyes and, like, fangs. And, like, the great thing is the horn. There's a demon, like, blowing into the horn, and that's where the music's coming from. And we were like, wow, I mean, like, the demon looks cool. Let's keep that. But, like, we probably drop all the little horns and spikes and stuff off, but it's a little too much.
Yeah, it's like, that doesn't look like something that would exist in the 30s.
Yeah, it's a little too, like...
But it's still kind of badass that he, like you said, as a match made in heaven, it seems like he got it right away.
Oh, yeah, he totally
the vibe
he
y'all were going for and everything.
He gets the art and I think he understands the soul of the book, and I think that's what really makes it fun. Yeah, you can show him that.
Sometimes we will have to explain what a scene's going to look like, where the characters are positioned.
Does he live in Brazil?
He lives in Brazil, yeah. So, like, George will do artwork like that, right. As an example.
So it's really, like, rudimentary figures.
Hand it to his five-year-old here. Draw this up for Dad.
That's actually my phone picture for when George calls me. That pops up.
Right, yeah. So we have, I think I saw 20 more days on the Kickstarter?
22.
And what are some of the levels of, because a lot of people may not know on Kickstarter, when you pledge to something, there's usually different levels of awards.
Well, yeah.
And so what awards are there?
First of all, it doesn't charge you right away either.
Right.
So when you pledge to Kickstarter, it won't charge you until the Kickstarter's finished, and only if we get funded, if everybody pitches in enough to complete our goal. And it'll charge you on May 1st. So,
okay.
The first level reward is just $1, and you get a thank you, and you get your name in the back of the book. At $5, you get a digital copy of the book. At $10, you get a physical copy signed by the two of us and the digital copy.
I'm glad you remember this.
No. Yeah. Actually, $10 is just the physical copy. $15, you get the physical and the digital copy. And then at 25, we have variant covers that we had done for the book.
Okay, that's
three
cool.
Three different ones. The first one was done by Devin Kraft, who's a pretty popular artist in the Dallas and Houston area. Mm-hmm. The next one was done by James Linares, who's another...
Okay, yeah, I met him before, yeah.
And the last one was done by Chris Ryder, who's an artist from California who does the Horse Minions comic. Okay. If you listen to my show, Comic yeah. Podcast, we put out a comic strip mm-hmm. with every episode based on the characters that my co-host creates. And Chris is the artist on that. So we have three really awesome-looking variant covers. And we're also giving those away as prints. So at $25, you get one of those prints of your choice, plus the physical and digital copy, and access to both of the podcasts. We're doing two podcasts, like a behind-the-scenes kind of thing, mm-hmm. which we're calling Speak Some Evil, okay. episodes 1 and 2.
All right.
And every level beyond that, I think you get all the digital rewards. At $35, you get two prints. At $45, you get all three prints. Or at $45, you can get a T-shirt in lieu of the prints. At $60, I believe you get a T-shirt and one print. $65 is like a T-shirt and all three prints. Then we jump to the higher levels.
What number are you on?
65, I think.
65? Yeah. Yeah, that's the T-shirt and the three prints. At the $100 level, already sold out. That was wow. the get yourself drawn into the
book. Oh, yes, I saw that.
Those sold out within like 10 minutes of the Kickstarter going live. Yeah. Everybody apparently wants to get themselves drawn in.
That will be an issue, too. Like, people will get their likeness an issue, too.
Yeah. yeah. At the $175 level, we have original artwork from Samir.
Hmm.
There's only 10 of those pages total. We've already given away two. So, you know, get on that quick if you want to have some of the original art. And I would think you want to. I feel like Samir is going to blow up and get picked up by Marvel or DC mm-hmm. fairly soon. Like, his artwork is just that good.
So basically, I need to get a first issue copy of some of his artwork.
It would not be a bad
put
idea.
That, put it away and then get it, like, you know, score, you know.
Get a CGC.
Yeah,
exactly. And then the highest level we have right now is the $500 level, which is the executive producer level, which comes with everything, including the original art.
Justin and George are going to make it big, too. I have faith in them.
Oh, that's why I gave the $50 level. I'm going to get a signed copy, so, you know, I'm good. I'm just going to keep it, like, all sealed up, not like my Superman Doomsday when I first got it and just opened it up.
I did that too, man. Don't feel bad.
Yeah, the $500 level is the executive producer level. There's only one of those left, and that gets you basically one of everything.
Yeah.
As well as an executive producer credit on the book. Although that doesn't come with any creative control, it's just the title.
Mm-hmm.
We did have one person already back us at that level.
That's incredible.
If I give you $200, can you put me down as a producer?
Is that an executive producer?
Yeah. Executive producer.
Sure, I'll do it.
No, that's awesome.
It has to go to the book, Justin. Hold on.
We do have a couple more rewards that are going to be showing up in the next few days. We do... have, like I said, we have the variant covers.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, those are only available as add-ons.
Right.
So, like, whenever you make your reward selection, you can add an additional $20 and choose one of the variant covers to get actually printed on the book you get.
Yeah, Chris Ryder's variant's pretty awesome, in my opinion.
All
of them are pretty awesome. But
yeah.
Chris Ryder's probably one of my favorites.
It's probably my favorite, too. So, anyways, we're thinking about making that more of a level, like a $100 level or $120 level, mm-hmm. where you'll be able to get all three of the variant covers and the normal cover and the prints.
Yeah.
So... keep an eye out. In the next few days, we should have some more rewards coming out.
Okay, cool. I did the $10 one, so you know, because I just wanted the book. I mean, I didn't even care if you guys signed it. I'm just happy that you guys are doing this because
well, we appreciate it, man.
You know us, so you yeah. can get it signed.
Yeah, I figure I'd see you somewhere. Off. I guess yeah, I get
even,
it signed.
Even a dollar.
You know, yeah, and because it's really cool, you know, and there's in this world, there's so many books coming out, but there's always room for more and more creative freedom, and it's really cool when you know people. You know, that are doing it. And that's what I'm excited about because I'm like, man, I know those guys, you know. And I hope that it's very successful for you. And I have no idea. I have no doubt that you are going to get 100%, I think, you know.
Oh, I think so, too.
Thank yeah. you, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been working really hard on it, and we've heard nothing but good things from the people that have read it. And the feedback on the art has been exactly how we feel about it. Like,
yeah.
Our,
yeah.
Samir's amazing. Chun Lin, who's our colorist, she's from China.
Mm-hmm.
We have an international team all working on this.
Wow, that's amazing, yeah.
She's... incredible, and she's fast.
Yeah,
like every single one of those pages she did overnight.
Wow, that's she's
dedicated
yeah, for sure.
She's really talented. And then our letterer is a guy named Benjamin Krieger from Oregon.
Okay,
I met him through my show because he has his own Kickstarter, which is supposed to start April 19th. So we're gonna be competing a little bit for a little while, right. But we're also gonna help each other.
Yeah, we'll donate to his. Too.
Yeah,
yeah. So when if the Kickstarter is in May 1st, do y'all have a possible release idea in yet?
We're hoping for June.
Yeah, okay. That's the reason why we put the Kickstarter out now as quick as we did. It's because we want to get it done by June for Compalooza.
Okay, yeah.
We would love to have a printed copy to show and sell to people at Compalooza.
Which I should have... I forgot to mention that because we're supposed to on our show, so we get credit. But we are now... Obviously, we knew we would be anyway since people don't know I work with Compalooza, as you do too, George. So I had no doubt that was going to be part of the Compalooza podcast program again. And so we will all be there covering the show, and you guys, of course, too. And so that's June 16th, 17th, and 18th at George R. Brown here in Houston, Texas.
I think it's 17th or 19th.
Is it 17th or 19th? Yeah, 17th or 19th, Father's Day weekend. So and we'll all be there, and hopefully we have Speak No Evil ready to go by then.
We should.
Yeah, it would be amazing if it gets something to
barring some kind of like major emergency happening to one of our artists, we should be able to make
it. So So while y'all are waiting in front of you, is Samir working on it already? He started so that y'all have it ready to go?
Page 5 now.
Okay, that's all. Yeah, I figured, because I didn't think he would just sit and wait, because then you wouldn't have it by June. Yeah.
Well, that would just be one more hat y'all will be wearing while y'all are there.
Yes.
You know, besides all the other stuff that y'all have going on that you wouldn't otherwise.
We have live shows and the podcast panel and interviews and... On top of that, we're going to be selling our book, hopefully.
Yeah.
Just keep on pushing the book, no matter where we are.
Hey, you know, when you're doing interviews, everybody you interview, just get them to hold it up, take a picture with it.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
And I will, if you want, not that you guys need the help from littletrustmej.com, but I'll post art for y'all, anything, you know, that y'all, if y'all want to send something. I mean, it might be somebody that doesn't see Metal Geeks or Comic Code Podcast. Maybe they see this and, you know. And
we should be able to save the images off the Kickstarter, so you can take whatever you wanted off
there. Okay, and I'll post something up for sure. And anything else before we... I mean, do you have any more questions? I mean, I've read a lot about the book already, so I'm pretty familiar with it, and I'm excited about it, you know, because I love the fact that I know, like I said, I know everybody, and I know people here in Houston. We're all very supportive. A lot of my comics are comics I've gotten from guys going to the conventions and stuff, and it's a really cool thing. And I do have one question. You know, in this digital age, you know, with musicians and stuff especially, it's, you know, I know you were talking about on one of the shows I listened to about the hopes that you get picked up, obviously, by a company or something. Is it very similar to how musicians do it now? You have to put it online, do the Kickstarter, and hope that just someone sees it? Or, I know you can submit to companies, but Marvel or DC, probably you might submit to them, and who knows if they'll look at it.
Well,
you have to go to smaller companies.
It's not only a Marvel or DC.
Right, right.
I mean, we're not doing superheroes.
No, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, we'd like to be able to shop it around to Image and Oni Press and Boom and those kind of places.
Yeah,
and I think most of the time when you're going to those, you have to have a concrete plan for what your series is going to look like and how it's supposed to go. And we're trying to get to the stage where we have everything lined up.
Right.
Like you said before, it was a 20-issue series. So we have a beginning, middle, and end for it. 2 10-issue arcs. We have the first 3 issues completely written, the first 6 scripted out. We know exactly how those are supposed to go. And we know how issue 10 is supposed to end. And that's the cliffhanger before it goes on to the next arc. So we want to be able to present all of that, like the physical scripts and the physical comics, so we can show them
to whoever.
We're dedicated and we can work, and we can work with the team. We can get everything published. And, you know, because when you work with one of those independent companies, you still have to do all the work yourself.
Right.
It's not like they do it for you. You just get their distribution and help and their, you know, their publicity campaign behind it, which...
And money.
Which is always helpful.
But,
having all of that together in one nice concrete package that we can show them and pitch to them, I think that'll make it way more likely the book gets picked up than just trying to submit it online or something like that. I mean, there's no guarantee. You know, this kind of stuff is always up in the air. But, I mean, worst case scenario, it's going to be available on all the digital platforms anyway. So anybody that wants to check it out will be able to on Comixology or anything like that.
Yeah, but it's absolutely worth the shot because you never know what'll happen.
I did have a question.
Sure.
When it came to the artwork for the brothers, like how many revisions did y'all go through before y'all settled on the way they should look?
2.
That was quick?
That quick.
Wow. I think it sounds...
2, yeah. I'd say so.
No. Oh, yeah. Now, did y'all have the character someone design before y'all started? Y'all let the artist... Because you said you were giving creative freedom.
We sent him a description of what he should like.
We did some research on Google and found pictures from the 30s and found what we wanted our two boys to look like.
I actually sent you a picture recently.
Yeah, you did.
So basically you gave him a lot to go with that made it really quick.
Like you said, but it's amazing how much he got the project.
Like a short guy... A short brother, a tall brother, make one a little heavy set, or...
Essentially, that's what Edwin should look like.
Yeah.
Right.
And that translates really well with Sears art.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So, Speak No Evil. Check. Well, I will post the kick... I will add the Kickstarter to TrustMyJedi.com and get that up there with some art for people to check it out. And obviously... Did you link to it on Comical? Or that's just, yes, it's go to Comical Podcast, Metal Geeks, and I don't know how much Carrie updates his website. Sometimes I go and he's a few days behind.
I was out of town right now.
Yeah, I know, and I was updating the website for a while for him, but then I just got too busy. I couldn't do Metal Geeks and all my stuff, too. So, anything else before we move? You want to talk some Daredevil and Walking Dead today, too?
Sure.
You know? And but check out their Kickstarter, Speak No Evil, Grey Bear Comics from Justin and George. It's going to be really cool. I'm excited.
I'm excited, too.
Yeah, I better have mine shipped first, okay? That's all that's...
They all go out at the same time.
So these two guys, they binge Daredevil really quickly, Matt and Frank.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I watched it over.
You know, it took me a couple weeks. I just finished the last episode the other day. But, you know, I've got little ones, and it's very violent. I can't watch it in front of Mikey, so I have to watch it at night. And my initial thoughts on this season was... It still might be my favorite comic book show on right now. And I'm a big Frank Miller fan of his run of Daredevil. It made me a Daredevil character. Daredevil's probably in my top five characters. I've always been a big fan. So, and I don't even totally hate the Affleck movie. I think the director's cut's a little better. The middle part of the film still sucks. But there's things I liked in it. Because I was excited in 2002 just to have a Daredevil movie.
I feel the same.
But this is obviously better. Yes. And, one of the biggest things I got from the second season is I didn't always buy Charlie Cox in the first year as Murdoch Daredevil. And I felt this year I bought him finally. He really sold me on the character. Because the first season, I just didn't buy him as Murdoch. I guess reading the books over the years, I had a different idea of who he should be. You know, and this season I really think that he came into the character and he was really fantastic. And the moment I realized it is in that second or third episode where the Punisher has him captured and the conversation between the two of them. And I finally was bought. I was like, man, this guy's awesome as Daredevil. And,
I can see that.
Yeah. And
the second season to me was a lot more like comic book.
More comic bookish. Yeah. Especially the last three or four episodes when the hand comes in and the regeneration chamber that they put Elektra in and all that. It got really comic bookish.
See, we didn't spoil that part. You spoiled that part.
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah, you're right.
But at the same time, ninjas.
Ninjas. It's
based off a comic book, so you can't bitch that it's comic book.
I never complain.
No, but for those who do, it's like, take out of the realm of reality, people. It's based off a comic book, just like The Walking Dead and all these other things. You know, get over like, it makes no sense. You know, it's like, whatever.
The only thing I cared about at all about Daredevil was Elektra.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the actress. I liked everything she did as Elektra. Just those final few moments with her and the way they carried that out.
Yeah.
I feel like it robbed season three of what should have happened.
Yes, I agree. I heard your comments on the Bri-Fi show about that, and I felt the same way, that it robbed us from what should be a future storyline that's going to happen.
For the show, though.
Right.
Did it, though? I mean, they could have... I mean, okay, Elektra dies. Like,
yeah.
Elektra always dies. Like, that's not news to anybody. Anybody who knows Elektra's character knows she dies. But they killed her with a sigh in the heart, which traditionally has always been Bullseye.
Oh, well, yes.
And Bullseye is one of my favorite villains of all time. Mm-hmm. Like, he's, like, number two for me.
Colin Farrell Bullseye?
I actually didn't mind Colin Farrell that much.
The Needles?
But Bullseye from the comics is, like, one of my absolute favorite characters. And they're bringing him in season three. They've all but confirmed that at this point. So I feel like...
They should have introduced him and added it as a surprise. Like, kept it secret.
Well, no. Gave him Elektra the opportunity to kill Elektra.
He should have been the one to kill Elektra with the sigh.
Well, I'm thinking, like, maybe, but, you know, at the end, he shows up and does it.
Well, I think...
They can do it again, but then it becomes redundant.
No, but what I'm saying is that... And that could have been, like, the big... Like, oh, crap, we didn't know he was going to be on there.
Like, the hand hired him to come in and kill him. That would have been cool. I would have been okay with that.
I was talking to a guy at work, and our feelings were on it that they were trying to do like Nolan kind of did with Batman, where he was influenced by Year One and stuff like that, but he also tried to make it his own. And I kind of felt like that with Daredevil. Like, they're obviously, it's very Frank Miller influence, but they tried to distance themselves from Miller by doing something like this with killing Elektra, but maybe they went too far this time. It's okay to be influenced, but don't take away the important moments of the Miller run.
Right.
And that's kind of how, that's a good way, I think, of putting it. And but overall, I like the season. I know, Matt, you're a huge Punisher fan, so he was very excited to see the Punisher. And was it George, was you, or you hate Bernthal? Or the way he talks and stuff?
We're both not.
Like, but I think he did good in the role.
He did.
You know.
Somebody, maybe it was yours or somebody that when they first announced it went on a tyrant how much they hated him.
Yeah, it was
me.
It was somebody posted it. You know, and I'm like, I think he did a good job. My cousin was like, when he started watching it, of course, like Mark, he has to watch it when the kids are in bed, and he's like, it's Shane. By episode three, it's he's a freaking Punisher.
You know? That's kind of how I felt too, because he didn't talk for the first couple episodes.
Right,
you just saw him killing people, and you're like, okay, it's just Shane killing people. But he still got that little lip thing, which I don't know.
With the side of his mouth.
I think that's just him. Yeah. But I was impressed. I'd eat my words a little bit because he was really good as the Punisher. Mm-hmm. By the end of it, that whole Kingpin Punisher episode was amazing,
intense.
I completely turned around on him.
Yeah.
So.
And
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead, man.
But I have this theory. I think he's the same person in The Walking Dead as he is in the TV series. Now, get this. You know, he gets up to Rick, you know, this other superpower of the group, and he's like, I'm a better father than you. I'm a better leader. You're putting this group at risk. You're going to get people killed. And he goes up to Daredevil, does the same thing. I'm a better superhero than you. You're a half measure. And it's like, you're going to get people killed by not putting these guys down. I'm like...
So Daredevil is a prequel to Walking Dead?
Yes. So I love the fact they called him Red, just like in the books. I'm glad they added that. And you're right, though, about Bernthal. He always kind of plays the same guy. Like, I hated him in Fury, but I hated everyone in Fury.
I enjoyed Fury, but it was just like, I didn't like him in Fury.
Right, but at the end of the movie, did you feel sad that any of them died? Not really, because they were all kind of assholes.
I felt a little bad.
A little bad? Just a little?
Because they were still Americans or whatever.
And,
In Fury, they fought the hard fight and lost.
Yeah, big time. And
they might be asshole, but they're asshole Americans.
One of my favorite things over the first two seasons of Daredevil so far has been Scott Glenn as Stick. It's funny, when I've read Daredevil books over the years, I always thought he was the perfect actor. And when they announced he was cast a couple years ago, I was like, that's who I would have cast, you know? And I love Scott Glenn in the role, and I think he's really good in it. Yeah, and he finally got his badass moment at the end of the season. You know, when
the scene where he's shooting crossbows and like, driving down the road was pretty great.
Yeah. he's such a cool actor. He's done a lot of great roles over the years. He was the original Man on Fire, you know, before Denzel did it. And people forget that he made that movie.
I didn't know that was a remake.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a remake. It was like 88, 89, Scott Glenn did it. And, So I finally finished Daredevil. Now I got to finish Jessica Jones. We watched one last night. Me and Mary have been watching it. We're like six or seven. I don't know, it's too slow for me. I'm having a hard time.
Oh, it's
really
a different show.
Yeah,
it's not an action show. It's a detective story.
Right, and it's just like I like it, but I'm just not like jumping to watch it really quickly.
Well, if you're only six episodes in, you haven't really gotten to the truly messed up stuff
right.
that he does. Give it a couple more episodes, and then I think you'll get kind of hooked.
Yeah, I'm a little bit farther in than him.
Well, the one we watched,
I just haven't picked it back up, and I keep doing it, but my work schedule, I get home, and I'm like, catch up on my TV shows, and then by then I'm out.
The one we watched last night was when he has her at the house, and he makes the bomb go off outside at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was kind of cool, but it was 1 o'clock in the morning. I was like, no, I need to go to bed. So, any other thoughts on Daredevil Season 2 before we move on to The Walking Dead Season Finale?
Yes.
No more other thoughts?
No.
Okay. So, The Walking Dead has been we kind of talked The Walking Dead at the end of almost our Rebel Radios. And so, the finale aired last week, and it was a bit controversial. We were talking pre-show about being a little bit slower, a little bit boring. I can see how y'all think. I rewatched it without commercials and going through it on the DVR, and it does flow better. Because you're right, Justin, 90 minutes, but yet they add 25 minutes of commercials.
Yeah.
And it drags the episode down. And when I watched it on DVR, it does move a little bit better. And I have a lot of thoughts on this. Obviously, we don't know who they kill at the end, because Negan finally appears.
Unless you listen to the fan audio manipulation.
Yeah, but, okay, let me ask you, being a video producer, do you buy it, or do you think it was faked? Because it can easily be faked.
It sounds possible.
It does sound possible, because when I rewatched it, I don't hear it. But obviously, like you said, they slow it down, they raise the audio and stuff.
It's
and
very plausible.
I think it's...
Well, explain to the people who listen.
Well, people haven't seen the YouTube clip out there. There's a YouTube clip where someone took the audio at the end, and they slowed it down, and they raised certain levels so you can hear the screaming and hear the beliefs that people think it's like in the comics. And this might be spoiler, but... At this point, the comics said issue 150, so if you haven't read issue 100, then too bad. Glenn dies in the comics, and people think that's who's going to die in a show because of the audio being raised. And I think, personally, that's the way it should be. I think Glenn should be the guy that goes out.
I think Glenn should have died a long time ago, and this should have been Daryl.
Yeah,
that's my opinion.
Glenn should never have like survived rolling under the dumpster.
Right.
That was nonsense.
Stupid.
That was absolute nonsense.
And
I think it goes back to, once again, the writers and producers not wanting to commit a fear of pissing somebody off and losing.
I don't think it was that. I think they wanted to guarantee, not that they needed to, people tuning in for season 7.
Honestly, you know? I think at this entire period, they're going to sit there and watch the, how the internet goes off and then figure out, okay, we can't do this person, this person. They're going to look at the person who's maybe least popular and then go, okay, that's who got killed.
My thing is, on Game of Thrones, people, like, die off left and right.
Main all the time.
All the time. And it's still, like, one of the number one people don't stop watching.
Nobody's going to stop watching.
But they don't have commercials that they're trying to sell you.
Well, but it's still the number one show.
Right.
Like, people go out to watch it.
Yeah, but they show boobs.
I don't think that's the reason. I really don't think that's the reason. Well,
it's like in The Walking Dead. You know, when I was reading, I stopped reading The Walking Dead after Negan gets captured in the book. I haven't finished. I haven't started going past issue 125, and when I read issue 100, it was the first comic I ever was pissed. I threw it down. I'm like, man, fuck you, Robert Kirby. You can't kill Glenn. It kind of had me angry.
I was upset. I mean, yeah. I wasn't upset that it happened, but I was, like, sad.
Yeah.
I actually felt really sad. Anytime a comic makes you feel emotional like that, you know it's just an excellent comic.
There's only two times it's ever happened, that and an Identity Crisis, when they kill Elongated Man's wife. It was very sad, you know? And because up to that point in Kirkman's book, I kind of felt like characters would just die like that. And that was the first time I felt emotion when he killed a character.
Because it was Glenn.
Yeah.
The only other one that I cared about was Dale.
And
Dale, like in the comics, Dale and Glenn were the heart of the group, and when both of them die, you feel it.
Yeah,
every other death is fairly meaningless. I mean, like it sucks when Abraham dies, but Abraham died. Like,
right,
it makes sense for what's going on in the story. Like when Judith dies, you don't even care.
No,
like, I mean the baby. I mean, granted, there are major differences between the comics and the TV series. Like the baby shouldn't even be there.
Been long gone. Yeah,
I mean they haven't even done a plot line with the baby being there. She just exists to be an inconvenience for whoever has to carry her.
Yeah, right. Well, and don't you feel that's a pre Scott Gimple thing before he took over the show? Like the previous showrunner left it in there, and now Gimple's kind of stuck with it. Like, okay, what are we doing?
I don't think Scott Gimple's that good of a producer, showrunner either.
No, but I think the show has been a little better since he took it over in some ways. Like I really like the beginning of the season.
What I say most of the time, I compare. Okay, like if you watch a movie or you watch a TV series that was based on a book, I say this all the time. Usually, the movie or TV series is going to be about 80% as good as the book was, the source material. With The Walking Dead, I honestly feel this way that the comic is about 85% better than the TV series. The TV series is terrible in comparison, and I think that a lot of that has to do with Rick. This season, though, I feel like it's the best season they've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely some filler episodes. There's definitely some nonsense, like Norman Reedus shooting the rocket launcher into a pool of gas. Like, why? Throw a lighter or a match. Like, there's no reason to shoot. Like, there's stupid things that happen still. But overall, this season was truer to the comics than it ever has been before. And this is the first season that I've overall enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of flaws. There's going to continue to be a lot of flaws. But they're starting to write the characters more like they are in the comics. And I can forgive all the story changes, but I can't forgive them changing the characters and who they are at their core so drastically.
And I think it still comes down to this. When he does a comic book, when he was doing it, he had nobody to answer to but himself. Now he has TV producers, AMC, all these people that are kind of like...
But he's pretty hands-on with the show, though.
There's characters popular. This character's popular.
Does anything on the show.
Well, he has an executive producer credit.
But he doesn't...
Maybe not as much as the early... I think maybe the earlier seasons he was more hands-on.
After they fired Frank Darabont, I don't think he's really been involved.
As much.
I still think it comes down to them going, no, this character's too popular to kill off. You can't do that.
It could.
It shouldn't matter, though.
It should matter to us, but to them it does.
That's why you end up with Gabriel and Sasha still being in the group.
Yeah,
like, and those two are useless. They do nothing. They don't advance the story. It's just like extra filler characters that are there for no reason. And if Sasha ends up being the person that Negan killed, like, I'm done. Like,
yeah. and I do think, like, I think, Frank, to bring your point together, I think was... And that is what holds it back from me in Game of Thrones is there probably isn't something that the AMC people do say, which you're right, George, too. It shouldn't matter. But there probably are some AMC people that saying, well, no, Norman Reedus has to stay on the show. Even though the emotional impact and the impact of the group, if he was to die, would be enormous. It would only make the show better if you have the right writers.
The aftermath is what makes it better.
Yeah.
Learning the group to deal with the problem. Well, as opposed to, like, waiting for the problem to happen.
It could have made the show a lot better overall if he had died 3 or 4 seasons ago like he should have.
Mm.
Like, my biggest problem with Walking Dead, like I've said before, again, is that they took the best parts of Rick and gave them to Daryl and made Rick kind of like a a stand-in leader, whereas Daryl did all the actual heroic stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, he went out and fixed all the problems, and Rick was just like, come on, guys, let's keep going.
Now,
like a cheerleader more than a leader.
All right. Now, as far as this finale went, do you guys feel that they should have ended it with a death and made it this great television moment, or are you okay with them making us wait till October?
I think this is one of the few things that George and I probably disagree on.
Yeah, I think they should have showed it.
And I'm really happy with the way they did it,
yeah,
because it pissed so many people off.
That's the only reason why you like it, though. I think for cinematic purposes and for, like, true impact for entertainment value, you show who died.
But I also don't think they could show the actual... Like, you've read the comic, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've seen Glenn get beaten to death.
Yeah.
His eye pops out of
right.
his socket.
You couldn't do it on AMC.
Couldn't do it on,
well,
on regular
no,
cable.
Well, no, but they could have taken a couple of blows. They
but
kind
it,
of pulled
it loses its cool. impact.
It loses
but,
its impact.
We're still talking about the same show that had them running over a pile of dead zombies and body parts are flying in.
But those are zombies, and it's perfectly
yeah.
okay to disfigure
Yeah, the FCC
zombies.
Says that's okay.
They can't
okay.
show them doing that to a person that's part of the group that people care about.
Right.
Like, they,
I
they won't do it. Well, I disagree, too. I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
That would be great. But... they're not going to do it.
This, yeah. this isn't full-on pay cable. This is still
yeah.
basic cable.
Still AMC.
Right.
So the way they did it, you get the effect. You get to see, you know, the guy dying, or whoever it was dying,
right.
and, you know, you get to hear the screams of everybody, and I mean, it kind of reminds you of that scene where Glenn is falling over and he shouts Maggie's name one time,
mm-hmm.
and then he dies. I mean, it felt like that to
yeah.
me. So I was okay with it.
Yeah.
I thought it mirrored the comics very well. I mean, I don't really like the ambiguity of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know for sure if it was Glenn or Daryl, but I understand why they did it.
Yeah.
And I can forgive them for that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was not a terrible finale. But I put to put in perspective, I was telling the same guy I talked to about comics over at work, that the finale aired Sunday, and the Major League Baseball started Sunday night. Baseball will be in its playoffs when it comes back, so we have to go through an entire baseball season to find out what happens. And when you put it in that perspective, you're like, holy shit, that's a long time. You know,
as
but,
many games as we play.
Yeah, you know, 162 seasons, so that makes you feel like it's going to be a long time. But overall, I think it was a great season. I really do. I really love the first half of the season where it kind of all took place over one day, and I thought that was ingenious storytelling. And you're going to have your fillers. I mean, The Flash, as much as I love The Flash, how many episodes do they have that just fills in until we find out what happens to Zoom?
But that's network.
You know, yeah.
They have 20
exactly
episodes
more episodes.
Still.
But yeah.
I mean, Walking Dead's only 12.
Yeah.
I feel like the Flash episodes, even the filler ones,
are good.
Are
yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, they're
yeah.
good, fun episodes.
Yeah.
The filler episodes of The Walking Dead, it's like, oh my God, stop showing Morgan walking places. Like, I'm so tired of it.
Man.
Yeah. Talk about character changes. He's completely different than
yeah.
in the book.
Plus, one of the biggest problems I had with the first half of the season was how freaking big is the town? It makes no sense that it takes like
yeah.
an entire day to get from one side of the town to the other.
Yeah, I never felt the town was that big reading the book, and
the
they made it seem like huge.
The passage of time for the first half of the season didn't work
right.
out. They did a really poor job managing that.
Yeah. And so we wait till October 6th, I think. And then we have Fear of the Walking Dead tonight. I don't know. I kind of get in. I watched it, but it's okay.
I really like it, actually.
You like it? See, my wife, Mary, loves it.
I think okay. it's way better than
okay,
Walking
so,
Dead.
Really?
So you've been, you see the scenes for tonight's premiere and everything, and they're on the beach. And have you been watching, like, the paying attention to any of the clip scenes?
No.
So they're the commercials for
yeah, I haven't
the,
really watched
the
clips.
Fight.
I don't watch any of the stuff live. I
yeah.
don't watch Dead Live. I watch it later.
Yeah, we usually watch it later, too.
During the commercials?
I usually download the
yeah.
episode.
Oh, so you didn't catch none of the...
I don't see any of the...
Oh, that's a short...
Like the short where the passengers mm-hmm. are on a plane, and it while this is all going on. And then it ties back to apparently one of the episodes... where the drug addict kid's walking around trying to get into houses and he sees a plane fly over
mm-hmm.
and it's apparently that plane. I think it's the same. I think that plane winds up crashing on the beach and all those people that are on the beach that are zombies now
are
for the passengers from that plane. That's what happens to that
yeah,
flight.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's
you know,
cool.
That's my
I
assumption.
I think Fear the Walking Dead is a way better show than Walking
I mean, I liked.
Dead.
I watched it. I just wasn't... I don't know. Maybe I need to rewatch the first
well,
season.
I kind of like... It's slow, the first season.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it because
well, it's, a slow
it's all new,
yeah.
new characters.
I do like it how it had a...
So you can't sit there and be like, oh,
well,
this ain't following the comic book.
That's what it is for me. Like... I mean, when I read the comics and I watch something afterwards, I can't help but make a little bit of a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with most things, I can
yeah.
give a lot of changes. With Walking Dead, it's really
it's
hard for
me.
Like, I have a lot of animosity towards the show just
right.
in general because of what they've done. But Fear the Walking Dead, it's all new characters. It's all new storyline. There's no connection to the two. So I'm watching it with fresh eyes, and I can actually enjoy
yeah.
what it is.
Makes sense.
And I like the reaction of, like, this is what happened when it first, how people adjusted when it first happened. Mm-hmm. When we get into The Walking Dead, they're already like how long into it?
Yeah.
At least everybody but Rick is.
One thing though, one thing I do think we agreed on before we were talking pre-show is Jeffrey Dean Morgan's pretty badass as Negan.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, he's going to be great. So we'll see how he goes from here.
Not so great as Batman's dad, but
no. And Maggie, right? And Maggie was Batman's mom.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't notice that. Yeah.
Great comedian too.
I've got one more thing before we close out the show. It's funny. 2 years ago, when I first met Justin, I was still learning. We had just started Rebel Radio. Rebel Radio was originally a radio show back in 06. And we brought it back as a podcast. And remember, I sat in when you guys interviewed Muse, and I sat with Carrie interviewing Muse, and I didn't know what I was doing yet. So I went and talked to James O'Barr, and I met him, and I was like, hey, I'm going to try this interview thing. And I had no idea what I was doing. I recorded on my iPhone, and I lost the audio. And I was like pissed. I was kind of disappointed. So I got a new phone recently, and I guess when I backed up my phone, it was on my computer. So I found the audio for the O'Barr interview. Sure. And I mentioned it on Twitter last week, and I told people I'd have it on this episode. So I want them to hear it, and then we'll talk about briefly about the interview on this episode. This is an interview with James O'Barr recorded in 2014. So some of the things he talks about obviously didn't happen because Luke Evans is not going to play the Crow if the movie even happens now. But I'll let you guys hear this, and then we'll talk about it for a minute before we close out Rebel Radio today.
Speaking with James O'Barr, the creator of The Crow. We are celebrating 25 years since the book has been out and 20 years since the movie. Mr. O'Barr, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thanks.
Enjoying Comicpalooza?
I am, a lot. This is my first time here. Not in Houston, but at this show.
Yeah, I've actually been waiting for us to get you. I was excited. And we have 25 years since the book, of course, and 20 years since the movie. What do you think of the legacy of The Crow and how it's still affecting generations?
I'm pretty baffled by it. I thought, because it's set at a very specific point in time, and, you know, like the fashions and the cars and things like that, kind of, you know, in my mind, they don't age well. They were appropriate for the time, but now they seem a little comical. But the themes seem to be universal. Generation of kids seems to find it every 10 years or so.
Right. Yeah, I just wrote an article about 20 years since the movie, and I related it to when I was in high school in 94 when the movie came out. I'd read the book a couple years before and how it affected my generation and the grunge era and things like that, how it's still affecting people today, and it's still very relevant. And in the article, I talked a little bit about that. And that, like you said, the timing of the 90s, we didn't have the internet as much. Right. And finding out what happened to Brandon over Matt, you had to read a magazine or see the news. And, you know, it's different times now. Everything's at our fingertips. And as we look back on that, you know, like you talked in the panel yesterday about The Crow's become a cult film. And did you, it's amazing that 20 years later, people are still watching it, still on Blu-ray. Part of that is the fact that it still does stand the test of time, even though it was written for a specific time.
Yeah. It's, and for such a low-budget film, it's extremely well-made. You know, I just saw it again recently. I did a talk before showing in, I think, Bristol, England.
Okay.
And I sat through it again, and it still holds up pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, for a little $10 million film, you know, it still has a lot of power and impact.
Right. 2 years ago, we had Ernie Hudson here.
Yeah.
And I spoke with him, and he was very glad that I spoke to him something besides Ghostbusters.
Right, right.
And he was so, what's the word, affectionate for you and Brandon and y'all's passion for it. And Ernie was very, very proud to be in it. And he says he doesn't watch it much anymore because it's hard for him to watch because him and Brandon were very close.
To watch with
right.
Because I was close with Brandon as well. But, you know, part of my job after the film was released is I went around the world every country it opened in, I went and did a talk and did the press and stuff for it. Because I wanted people to see it for the right reason. I wanted people to see it because Brandon was proud of it.
Right.
And, not because this is the film he died in. So so for 2 years, I had to watch it, you know, at least once a week, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of times in several different languages. So, so I, you know, no, I have, I've grown affectionate for it rather than, you know, I don't. There are a few scenes that, that still make me sad, but, you know, now I just kind of marvel at Brandon's energy.
Yes, you can tell his a passion for it.
Yeah.
It's right there on screen.
Yeah, yeah, his enthusiasm. For it was just unwavering. You could not slow him down. And he was determined that this was going to be not his breakthrough film, but the film that distanced him from his father.
Yes.
And I think he succeeded on all levels.
Like, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is that you said, like you say, it can make you cry, is just in the apartment with Ernie.
Right.
And how, believe me, everything is trivial. It's quiet, it's soft, it's endearing, and it's just a great moment.
And that's very much like Brandon was in real life.
Yeah.
Very, very quiet and soft-spoken, very humble. Just a real sweetheart. I can't say enough nice things about
it. And just one more question, because I don't want to take too much of your time. And I was one of those passionate fans. It was when I heard the remake, I was kind of, then I heard you were on board, which you talked about yesterday, and I'm excited about it now. And I heard you were working on casting, so are we looking at 2015, hopefully?
Yeah, that's the projected release date, will be October 2015.
Okay, all right, I'm excited for it.
The original film was released in October, so this will, I guess be the 22nd anniversary.
Yes, and then some fanboys cringed a little bit at Luke Evans. When I saw Luke Evans, just like you said yesterday, I thought, fantastic. The guy's a great actor.
He is, and he looks phenomenal in the makeup, and his dedication, and the work he's put into it, and the fact that he wanted my approval, too, was just, it meant the world to me,
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. O'Barr, and we appreciate it.
Hey, you're listening to Rebel Radio Podcast, and this is Jay Muse, Snooch to the Nooch. Trust me, I'm a Jedi.com. Go there and do it.
So that was my interview I did 2 years ago with James O'Barr. And the weird thing is, Matt had texted me on the day of Brandon Lee's anniversary for his death the other day, a couple weeks ago, on March 31st, right? Mm-hmm. And the same day, I found it on my phone. Isn't that really, it's kind of bizarre.
Serendipitous. Man.
Yeah, it was almost like a crow thing.
That's what I told him.
And that was my first celebrity interview I did, so I was a little nervous, but O'Barr was very nice, and obviously Luke Evans is not going to be in The Crow now. The film is in development hell and probably fell apart for the good reasons. I think it's something that doesn't need to be done. Let's leave Brandon Lee's legacy alone, I think there's no reason for it, and I hope that at least people got to hear the interview, because I like O'Barr. I was a big fan in high school of his, and I've heard that he's not always liked in the artist community because he can be kind of arrogant, and people are like, well, why should his tragedy be different because he cashed in on it? And to me, sometimes I think people, well, you're just jealous because you didn't cash in on your tragedy. I mean, that's the way I feel about it. So that was my interview from 2014 with James O'Barr from The Crow. And so before we go, Star Wars Rogue One trailer hit this week, and Star Wars is everywhere. We talked about on Rebel Radio before that we feel that Star Wars has become its own genre. It's
Star Wars.
Yes, it's with itself, and I loved Force Awakens. I think everybody did. It's universally pretty much loved. I rewatched it again. It still holds up on Blu-ray. And
like 3 times in theaters.
I watched it last night.
Yeah, I saw you were watching it, and so
I've only seen it 1 1/4 time.
One and a quarter.
At the theater, then once when I bought the DVD,
he fell asleep. He probably fell asleep watching it.
Well, no, because my wife wants to watch it again, and, so I'm like, okay, we'll have to pick a night or day. Or
so
whatever.
Rogue One, for people that don't know, and George had posted a nice little picture to explain where it takes place, and on his Facebook, that it takes place a few months to a year, maybe before Episode 4, A New Hope. We don't really know exactly, but we're guessing a few months to a year. So this is a prequel, people, and it takes place before Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan appear in the cantina to get Mos Eisley to get Han's help. And it's about them stealing the Death Star plans. And my favorite image of the trailer is the AT-ATs at the end on the beach. That was really cool. And
it felt like Battlefront.
Yeah.
It felt like
And but at the same time, I also am watching the trailer, and I felt like I was watching the Godzilla trailer because it is done by Gareth Evans.
Evans,
yes.
Is it Evans or Edwards?
Evans is No, Evans is Evans the raid guy.
Yeah,
they both kind of Gareth Evans is the raid guy, and Gareth Edwards is the Godzilla
right,
guy.
There you go.
So they have very similar.
The raid guys are involved with Star Wars and stuff.
Right.
Like that,
yeah. So I also felt like it was cut like a Godzilla trailer in a way. Is that because it's the same director? But I'm kind of excited for this movie, kind of an underworld Star Wars film. You know,
I'm personally excited for it. Oh, yeah. I just don't like the way they titled it, Rogue One, a Star Wars story. I think it's kind of like, you know, discrediting it a little
bit. It should
bit.
Just be Star Wars.
Yeah, it should have been
yeah.
Star Wars.
Leave the other part out. Maybe, hopefully, they'll change it.
They probably.
Well, originally, they were going to call it like, Rogue One, a Star Wars anthology, and they felt it was too wordy, and they dropped it to story.
A Star Wars story
is. It should be Star Wars
it's
Rogue
like a
One.
Yeah.
Story.
Like,
yeah.
People are smart enough to figure out where it goes.
Yeah, I think so.
Now I'm not going to shade to put too much negativity on it, but I would have kind of liked the lead character to have been more alien.
That could have been
Twi'lek?
Cool.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, yeah.
Because all our heroes, most of all our heroes are British.
Yeah,
they're British.
It's like my cousin's like the rebellion is British.
Yeah, he plays like a CGI robot in it.
We never had a lead in any of the Star Wars movies that's been an alien.
Yeah, that's what my cousin says.
That would have been a good.
The rebellion is British.
But I'm talking on the movies.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be kind of cool. And I see people were saying that Felicity Jones kind of looks like Daisy Ridley a bit, and I can see the comparisons.
Nah.
No. Too much, man. Too much. And Snoke is, you know, Ezra or something from Rebels.
Hey, dude, that would be awesome.
It would be crazy.
Yes. God,
I want Ezra to turn. I want him to become a Sith.
Dude, I thought he was Sith ever since he made those dragon characters go towards the Inquisitor in the cave.
Yeah, for some reason, I want him to turn bad.
I like him,
but
Ezra
I want him
to turn into Snoke. That'd be amazing.
Yes. Do you watch Rebels? It's great.
What's great about Rebels is that next season is going to be their last season. Supposedly going to be their last season, and that's going to lead straight into Rogue One.
Yeah, I mean it's great. It's exciting. It's a fun show to watch, and. So Rogue One comes out December, because we're getting a Star Wars movie every year for like the next 6-7 years or something.
I explained that to my wife, and she's like, huh? And I'm like, yeah.
Like, Disney owns everything.
Her mind was blown.
And at first, I wasn't so sure about these standalone films, and I still wasn't sure until I saw this trailer. Now I'm like, okay, this could turn out pretty cool. I was not sure about the young Han, and I just, my biggest problem with that is the recasting. I know, obviously, you have to recast Harrison, but you really have to get it right.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be perfect.
Well, see, my thing is they threw out all the canon, and I liked the story that they already written for his background. You know, I enjoyed it. And the fact, I would hate for
but
him to
I think they're starting to borrow some stuff. They're talking about it, borrowing from some of those Legends canons, they call it now. Maybe bringing some of it into the films. You know, we'll see. But what are your thoughts on Rogue One, the trailer, other than
I'm
just
excited.
Excited?
It looks fun.
Yeah.
Just that one line, which was cut weird. And I think it's cut weird in the trailer.
I rebel.
Yeah, that whole, like, it's rebellion. I rebel.
Yeah.
I don't like the way it's delivered. One thing that's just a personal problem.
I really liked was Donnie fucking Yen in a Star Wars movie.
Donnie Yen, man.
That's awesome.
That was
amazing. You know? I mean, that's
how many Asian people do you see in Star Wars?
I mean, him alone being in the film makes me like, wow, that's cool. Yep. You know, and it's like he looks like a non-Jedi badass. You know,
he's gonna do some Wing Chun.
Well, not only him, but Forrest Whitaker, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's always great.
It took you a little bit out of the movie, right?
It does take you a little bit out of it, because you're like, holy shit, Forrest Whitaker in a Star Wars movie.
Right.
I mean, I knew he was in it, but it's still just kind of weird when you finally see him on screen.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's always played kind of
serious roles
or kind of... So he's done a few awkward things, you know, and so it's different to see him in, but it was really cool. And I think that's really... It's good that these actors, and Diego Luna is a great young actor too, and I think he'll be exciting. And it looks like he plays one of the rebellion people.
There's
working
a couple
with
of other like alien people in their ragtag crew.
But
right?
I'm talking central characters.
Yeah,
I know. I'm just.
There are aliens. There's definitely aliens. Yeah.
Just the focus.
Chewbacca's an alien. He's been in there since the beginning. There's always somebody alien on the team. But I'm just saying, like, it would be awesome to see. Like a Twi'lek, somebody as like the main.
Yeah, but you also got to think: is that marketable? People are gonna like? Oh yeah, that's what I want to see.
I think
it's
so.
Star Wars,
yeah.
Man. I think so.
Maybe in the next anthology film.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, but I like these side stories. It's like one off. You take it for what it is, and it ties into either the past, present, or future.
Yeah.
Things kind of like the reason why I like Rebels is the way they introduce like the B-wing, how it came into existence. I thought that was freaking cool. You know, I was like, that's one of my favorite episodes just because of that reason.
You know?
And I like how they explain the Inquisitors and why they don't exist later on in the series.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's well written. Dave Filoni's done an excellent job with the animated stuff, and because he gets it, you know, and that's what they need.
Or the episode where the villains from the first three episodes, their planet's completely, there's nobody on there.
That was a long time ago. The first three episodes.
The insect people. What are their names?
I don't even remember.
I don't remember.
I know all the Star Wars characters.
The Goombas?
The
ones that fly around.
Oh,
Genosians?
Yeah, like they go to their planet and it's...
Damn, I forgot that.
And there's nobody on there. They're all gone.
Oh.
And they're like...
It's on the tip of my tongue, the good...
And he tells the one commander, find out what happened to him.
Because we
and
wiped out the prequel continuity.
But I kind of see him getting tied in as being a good guy eventually. Like, he could show up as a good guy that finally realizes that the Empire is evil, and maybe what he's doing isn't such a noble thing, and kind of changes his attitude. While
I don't even know what you're talking about anymore. I'm so far back, going back to the first three episodes, I'm like... But anyway, I really don't. I'm just lost.
We haven't seen him since then. You know, he gets injured, and then, you know, this guy's like, you know, find out what happened to everybody on Geonosis. They're gone.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll come back around to it.
You know, the Empire but wiped them out.
Rogue One will hit in December. But that's it. That's all I got. So go check you guys' Kickstarter out. People are listening, go to Grey Bear Comics, their Facebook page. And Grey Bear, y'all have the website, right? GreyBearComics.com. Go there or Comical Podcast. I'll post it up on TrustMeI'mAJedi.com. So you should have no problem finding it on the intranets.
Yeah, we can use anybody's help. It's up for the next 20 days or so, 21 days.
Yeah.
And, we really want this book to exist. And
the one guarantee...
Any help we can get will be amazing.
The one guarantee we will give is that it will be cool, because these guys are cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know about George sometimes. I'm just kidding, George. But thank you guys for coming on. We appreciate it. And it was a fun episode. And that's all I've got. And this has been...
Justin.
And George.
Matt the Electric Monkey.
Frank T. Biscuit.
This is your host, Mark. Thanks for listening to Rebel Radio. Until next time, I don't have... You have anything to say? And he always says good...
Shamalabamba.
There we go.
This is Booker T, Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Rebel Radio. Now, can you dig that, sucker?
This is James O'Barr on Rebel Radio. Thanks for listening. Yeah.